Hello and welcome to the Consumer Goods Forum End-to-End Value Chain podcast. My name is Joelle Mbuya Leclerc and I work in the communications team. In this podcast series, we'll be hearing industry insights from people working towards collaborative solutions that benefit the entire value chain. Today, we have the pleasure of hearing from Eric Howerton, co-founder and CEO of White Spider. He'll be sharing his thoughts on startups in the FMCG sector, branding and marketing, optimization, and more. Good morning, Eric. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to join.
Great. So just before I dive into the questions, Eric, I'd just like to set the context a bit for our listeners. So we know that shoppers today are years ahead in how they want information. And with regards to omnichannel, we see that adapting with speed and frequency definitely seems to be the name of the game. And when we talk about speed to innovate, we know that capital investments into startups is a business of its own. And also item-level data and content is absolutely critical. And major brands that attempt to truly optimize content struggle tremendously due to brand and legal teams. And so, Eric, my first question for you is, what role do startups play to help the FMCG sector in catching up?
Yeah, so startups in today's time, I think, are becoming even more critically important in the industry just because there's the ability to be agile, to have adaptation in the marketplace. You know, in my experience, the need for a company as a whole, and that means the entire unit within the company, all the people that are there, have to have that adaptation value and be adaptable to the change, the evolution that we're experiencing in today's omnichannel retail environment.
Definitely. And so do you think that the time has come to review classical branding and marketing, or is it maybe already too late?
I think that we have to have some sort of sense of reality that there is change in the marketplace and that there has been significant change. Traditional branding and marketing, advertising, those things still have a very significant role in the marketplace. It doesn't mean that they're being replaced or that they should be forgotten about, because really about every form of marketing or advertising placement really does actually work in some capacity. But what I've seen in the market is that there's less of an exception of the way that shoppers are behaving to gathering information, to do research, to what's influencing their purchasing decisions. And as technology is introduced, that there's a reluctance or there's a hesitation to change to that new form or new way in which shoppers are communicating or receiving information. You know, the reality to it is that, in the past, brand marketing was predominantly the way that shoppers would receive information. And, you know, a lot of this is really due to the way mass communication has changed. You know, if we look back in history, these really major corporations, whether it was radio, TV, newspapers, magazines, et cetera, that really controlled the mass amount of communication that was going out in the marketplace. And when you have that, you have more of an ability to find your target audience, to find shoppers, to place that influence with advertising. And more people received the same information from a single source. That was all interrupted, you know, in the 90s and late 90s when blogging came about. Whenever me as an individual, Eric Howerton, I can, in essence, become a mass communicator. And as that started really picking up through the internet, and then we, you know, in came social media, and it just accelerated to that point to where every individual has the ability to broadcast their own message and capture their own audience and build their own circulation, their own networks across the entire globe. Human beings want information. They want the most relevant information, the truth. They want, and they want that as fast as possible. And so every time new technology is innovated to do that in a more efficient way, more convenient way for the individual human that's receiving that information, they adapt to that and they take hold of that. now look at today's retail environment, right? And people are looking online, they're asking Google the questions, they're not asking dealers, they're not, you know, depending upon advertising to be able to get the information they need about an item. They're able to do anything that they want. And so, for example, if a new mom, she doesn't have to, depend on, periodicals or certain things, she can ask Google, what are the best diapers for a newborn baby? And she has no idea what it is. She's looking for inspiration at that point. She needs to be inspired as to what's the best choice for her new precious baby that's coming in this world, and she's the caretaker for that baby. And so it's really important for her to find the information that she feels confident and that's credible to her. And so that's the phenomenon that we have today. And the reality to it is that whatever populates first place in your own search engine queries, what we call search engine result pages, in Google ranking on retailers, that those first three positions that rank are the ones that I'm clicking and trusting. Because it's not that, it's more about the robot is the one that found the information for that item or for whatever that query was. And I trust the robot, the algorithm. The important thing is that we as brands and manufacturers and even retailers, and, really need to understand that this doesn't mean that Super Bowl ads don't work, or that even magazine publications or FSIs, all that stuff still works in a certain sector. But the reality is that the shoppers are depending upon this robot, and that we have to adapt to that very quickly. It's been going on for a very long time now. The internet's real. We all understand that. And the essence of that algorithm returning back the best result for an item all has to do with data and content about that item, not about the brand. It's not brand messaging at that point. It's not, it's not about advertising. It's about authentic, genuine, relevant, optimized data and content so that that algorithm can scour the page and any pages on the internet to get back the best results. That algorithm depends 100% on that content.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you've mentioned this a bit in your previous answer, but everybody talks about optimization. So, Eric, what is your definition of optimization?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because I've seen optimization used 100 different ways. Like within this ecosystem of optimization and of true search engine optimization, where the algorithms are reading that content, what the word optimization means is that the content itself has had the keyword phrases weaved into the content or placed within a certain priority set, within a frequency set, and it's in a very authentic and genuine way, so that the algorithm can read a page or read an item content to be able to return a most relevant result back to the shopper. And so if we kind of back up and look at what the point of an algorithm is, its biggest point, like we talked about earlier, is to return the best result in the world back to the user. Because if the algorithm does not do that, it starts to lose credibility to the user. Then the user chooses a different search engine, right? I mean, we've had experiences going to retailer A and getting really bad results when we ask a question or they're looking for an item, and then we choose retailer B because they're searching them. And unless those things are optimized, then you're not going to be able to be found by the search engines, and therefore you're not going to be ranking, and you need to be ranking through positions 1 through 3 on the first page. If you're not hitting that, you're really getting beat by somebody else. One of the confusing things that are out there is the word optimization is being used as it's in kind of a traditional sense, where I would optimize an image to place into a magazine, which is a totally different meaning, which is just basically making it camera ready, to use kind of more traditional terms, optimizing, getting the dots per inch ready or whatever it might be for that specific channel. That's not what this means in the item level, in the content world, in search engine optimization world. Optimization is 100% specifically about leveraging keyword phrases that are built based upon heavy research and woven into content, so that way the robot can read. It's not about optimizing for humans, which is a different term called what we call convertibility. conversion-based content.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much for sharing that. And so, Eric, I mean, I keep hearing this new buzzword, disruptive. And so I'm curious to hear from you. Are our companies really that disruptive, or is this just wishful thinking?
So I think that there are some companies that are being disruptive. I think there's a lot of them that are wishful thinking. And I think that from an advertising, the marketing agency side, I don't see much disruption going on at all, to be honest with you. There are retailers that are being disruptive in the sense that they're finding new ways to leverage. You can take, for existence, for example, a brick and mortar retailer that's been a brick and mortar retailer for many, many decades, and they're just now coming into the online space where they're taking a disruptive approach and understanding how to leverage that real estate and that physical presence in a digital space that has a competitive advantage against other retailers that may just be e-commerce pure. Not to consider that disruptive. I've also considered some companies are leveraging delivery. Like, how can they see the most convenient method to transact and for shoppers to be able to conveniently research and conveniently reorder and conveniently receive their items? There is a lot of disruption in that space. And interestingly enough, you just see a lot of industries or companies that are not even in the retail space specifically, or in the manufacturing space, but more third party, whether it's through logistics or through automotive or whatever it might be, that are being disrupted. They're really coming up with, they're able to see opportunities in ways that they can leverage their resources and their historical business operations to come in and help disrupt this retail space. So I would say that the retailers in themselves are probably at the head of the curve of disruption. And I would say that they can do that because they can see a little bit firsthand more of what's going on with the shopper. I mean, if shopper behavior changes, they're able to kind of ping that really quickly, and they're competing against other retailers on how they can get items to their shoppers more conveniently. And so they're really having to go out front and make that investment. On the second tier, though, on the manufacturer side, when we're talking about suppliers to retailers, the disruption there is actually quite slow. I mean, I don't see too many manufacturers truly disrupting the marketplace. They're really just participating and trying to find they're really leaning on the retailer and determining how that they can participate in what the retailer's disruption is, which I think that is just a little bit at a disadvantage of the opportunity that really they have at their plate. Retailers are so overwhelmed today in trying to disrupt and accommodate this digital shopper that they need all the help they can get. And if you had some manufacturers out there that are really serious and were able to invest the energy and time and resources to, hey, I want to be a disruptive manufacturer, and I want to do some unique things and come to the table and present this to the retailer and champion that, and then do that once and do it again. I mean, I think that there's a lot of opportunity out there. It's just a matter of, does the manufacturer really see what's happening in the retail landscape? I mean, like, legitimately see, not just playing catch up, but are they seeing the opportunities that are out there instead of just trying to accommodate the threats that they're experiencing? And in order to be disruptive, you have to be ahead of the curve. You can't just be on time or behind. You really have to be ahead of the curve. And I think the third parties that are really participating in this space, in the retail space, is, are the agencies, the marketing, advertising agencies, which are not being disruptive, in my opinion. There's quite frankly just a lot of traditional means of which that agencies have built businesses and have become experts in, and it's in marketing. Advertising is a very chaotic and intense industry in of itself, but times are, you know, have changed and are evolving at such a rapid pace, it's really just difficult for agencies to stay ahead and to stay on time. And so, you know, there's the programs that maybe are out there are just not ahead of the shopper curve in what's going on. And the biggest lack that I see is the digital merchandising, all the item level type of optimization content we've been talking about is being missed by a large part in the bigger agencies that are out there today. I don't see agencies in the marketing industry being very disruptive. I think really what the most disruptive industry is definitely the technology space, and then whether that's the devices that might be being used for retail, but then you also have the softwares and you have the platforms. Those are very disruptive. But when it comes time for the agencies to really to take that advertising, that marketing, those dollars, and how they're placing them, and not putting those end landing pages and those end item pages and that item level content is where the disruption lacks. And that should have been done many, many years ago.
Okay, great. Thank you for sharing that. And I think a key takeaway from your response is that in order to be disruptive, you indeed have to be ahead of the curve. And so, Eric, do you think, in your opinion, are major brands and retailers fast enough for what they're facing?
I think the retailers are. I think that they're just fast enough, right? And I'm saying that from a historical perspective. I think that there's some retailers out there today that are fast enough and that are doing a great job. It's pretty amazing what some retailers are able to do, especially if you get into larger retailers. The ability to have an evolving retailing business in this climate, and to get every person within that company, or at least the majority of them, pointing into an evolution and adaptability state in this retail revolution that's going on, is quite tremendous. And so I definitely commend any retailers doing that, and they are being fast enough, I would say for the most part. But obviously we can see the casualties of retailers that have not been. And a lot of times that's not due to being fast enough today. That was not being fast enough a few years ago. But I think that what the great thing is that it really just kind of sets a pretty even benchmark for all retailers, though, in the sense that the shopper's evolving, technology's evolving, information's evolving, convenience is evolving at such a rapid pace. Any retailer can really make a decision at any point in time to be a disruptive retailer and gain competitive advantage. And that's the big threat for retailers out there. Not only do you have to be fast enough, but you have to be fast enough every day when you show up and show up for work and show up for what you're doing. I mean, how can you consistently, continuously, and frequently disrupt every single day? And it is exhausting. We would be lying to say it isn't, but that's just the reality of today's market. When it comes to being fast enough for the shopper, I don't think that anybody really knows what that's going to look like tomorrow. The technology that is disruptive is released. Shoppers pick up on it. They love it. They use it. It's convenient. All is well. You'll probably see more retailers innovating and bringing that to market. It'll be interesting leveraging their assets. And that will just continue to accelerate. And manufacturers are going to, just going to simply have to not just watch what's happened, but think about what is happening and how do they accommodate that and be prepared. And I put it this way, in this climate, technology will continue to evolve at a rapid pace. We as humans have to be constantly adaptable to that evolution. We don't know what nanotechnology is going to be out in the market tomorrow. We just simply don't. I mean, we didn't know what's out here today that was out 3 months ago. It is moving so quickly. To invest as a manufacturer into technology, is not necessarily the safest spot, because it could change on you. And shopper behaviors will continue to change, and trends and advertising platforms and all this stuff. But there is one constant amidst all of this, and from yesterday to today and in the future, and that is content. Whether you have, doesn't matter how much technology you have out there, if you got to have bottom level content that is beating your competitors, that is the safe place to invest. And that means really, are manufacturers really putting the resources necessary? Are they leveraging the right partners to help them with that? And it's not a, this isn't a face, you know, Facebook just came out with an advertising platform, and so, you know, just start doing that channel. It's not that. This is core merchandising, right? This isn't even marketing. It's a core new way of merchandising to the shopper. And so are you putting enough resources in at that item level, not the brand level, and it's not brand marketing. It is digital merchandising. And where are your resources stacked against that to create the, to research and study the shopper? What is the best content to create? And then to come back and build a strategy for at that item level, including all of its sub items, and its variable and like items. You know, are you creating the right type of content for that? Not just content, not to fill in boxes and just to use what you've already created on the marketing side and just put in the boxes. That's completely wrong. Is it at the item level? Is it what shoppers are searching for? Does a shopper care, you know, about that item? And when they search, is your item going to appear in relevancy? And then the third part to it is are you going to create unique content based upon that data and based upon that strategy? Are you going to create it for that purpose and not get in bottlenecks and distracted from traditional content creation plans?
Great. Thank you very much, Eric. And just before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners? For example, where can they go to reach out to you, or if they want more information about White Spider?
Definitely can reach out via LinkedIn. I'm constantly on LinkedIn. You can go to whitespider.com, or you can email me at ehowerton. That's ehowerton at whitespider.com. And I appreciate the time to participate today.
Great. Thank you very much, Eric, for joining us. And we hope to hear from you again soon. And thank you so much. For joining in to this episode of the End-to-End Value Chain podcast, and be sure to catch the next one. In the meantime, for more information about the End-to-End Value Chain initiative, please visit www.tcgfvaluechain.com.